Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Go there today, HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara. All across upstate, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Utica, Watertown, and way out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now even Boston, Massachusetts. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants. And you've heard from Linda Malaya here in the last couple of weeks directly on this show and through our advertisements that we refer to our people as mortgage consultants for a very good reason, because the process of going through a mortgage today is more than just taking an application or being qualified, so to speak. It's about consulting with you to make sure that we're finding the best product for your particular needs. And there are many, many products out there. So, and ask about one of our many exclusive programs, including what we call our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk, none at all, to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. How that works is that we actually commit a mortgage for you. All you need is a piece of real estate to go along with it, and we'll help you find that too at Hunt Real Estate. So call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700 for personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. And check out that low-rate guarantee. Certain restrictions do apply, and our details are on our website, huntmortgage.com. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the only one of its kind, certainly in any of the markets we serve, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, all across the markets we serve. All you have to do here in Western New York is dial 716-631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about. No matter whose listing it is, if you see a sign and it's got a whole bunch of junk on it and you can't stop to write all that stuff down, just dial 631-4800, and you'll be prompted with enter the street number of the house you want to know about. The hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. So sometimes there's more than one house available with one particular number. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast in any market we serve, on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. Only thing you need to do is faster than going to your phone and looking it up on Google or Zillow or one of those things. We're in a very active market right now. As you've heard many times in this show, there's a shortage of inventory. If you thought about buying and selling, there's probably never been a better time. Or even selling and maybe renting for a while to see what you want to do and see if the right property comes up. It's an opportunity to take advantage of what we see as improving prices all across our marketplaces, because supply and demand always has some effect on this. And in addition to that, we have near record low interest rates. They've blipped up a little bit in the last week. If you've been following the bond market, very, very interesting things happening in the financing market, and you should know about it. But remember, when you are ready to enter this market, remember this, that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. So stop into one of our many open houses this weekend and ask about details. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, even the Rochester Americans, and we also support our Buffalo Bisons. We are live on WBEN 930. If you'd like to participate in today's show, all you have to do is call us here in the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, star 930 for mobile. And you can even text us at 30930 with any question or comment you may have, and we have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is the executive of the County of Erie, Mark Pullenkars. Good morning, Mark.
It's good to be back, Peter.
It's great to have you here. It's been a while. I was just looking over my notes here. Probably way too long. But back when you were here last time, you were talking about the first growth in population in Erie County in a long time. How are we doing right now?
We pretty much leveled off. We're still above where we were in 2010, based on the estimates from the Census Bureau. It's a good thing, because for decade after decade, our community had lost population. Erie County is still seeing growth. I'm a little worried because other parts of Western New York are not. Niagara County, Chautauqua, Genesee, they're seeing a continual loss of population. But you have to have a strong central core. The city of Buffalo is the central core, so to speak, of Erie County. Erie County is the central core for Western New York. So we're still seeing population growth in Erie County. The city of Buffalo is still seeing a little loss, but not like it was in years past. And that loss is being offset by growth in other parts of Erie County. So that's a good thing. I think it's important that that happens because if we continue to have population loss, we can't sustain our economy. We need to have in-migration of individuals to continue this renaissance that we see with regards to our economy. I know you need it from our real estate market. Mm-hmm. We need it to grow the various industries that we have here. We have seen in-migration, especially in the health and medical fields, as people come here for the jobs that are being created on the medical campus. We're seeing it with some other areas as well, advanced manufacturing. And I consider the GM engine plant in Tonawanda, advanced manufacturing. It's kind of like Disney World if you ever went in there, just watching it with the robotics and so forth. And they're bringing in people from across the country to work at that plant. So there's good things happening, but I'm also watching what's going on in the national economy. And I think we're all a little worried about what may happen with the national economy, because if the national economy enters a recession, it's certainly all areas are going to be affected. And when there's been recessions in the past, our area has been affected more than others.
Now, it's interesting. There's perhaps more talk about recession in general than reality would lead one to believe. If you didn't listen to the noise and just looked at the indicators, you'd think that what are these people talking about?
Correct. And it's weird because you see the stock market keep on seeing tremendous growth.
Record highs.
Yeah, and then I also see an inverted yield curve which regards the bond sales. And I watch that because Erie County sells bonds. And you very rarely ever see an inverted yield curve with regards to bond sales where you're actually getting a better rate of return in the early months and years than you do in the long term. And that's a little scary because if you look at the history of recessions and what's a strong indicator for it, usually the inverted yield curve with regards to bond deals is an example of it. So I think everyone's kind of sort of watching, wondering what is going to happen. The economy is very strong, but there is certainly issues that we're worried about.
Well, you know, this is very interesting, this inverted yield curve, and I don't want to get too technical with our listeners. We went into that with Linda Malaya a couple weeks ago, and I think we just confused people. So
probably put a lot to sleep.
I'm certain we did. But what you talk about in terms of the county issuing bonds, that is important. Why does the county issue bonds, and what do we use the money for?
We issue bonds for major reconstruction road projects, major infrastructure projects like building projects. Bonds give us an opportunity to go to market, sell on the credit of the county, and we have a pretty high credit rating now compared to where we were about 10 years ago. And it allows us to bring in funds that we'd otherwise have to generate from our own taxable revenue, our property taxes and sales taxes. So when we go to the market and borrow $40 or $50 million for road projects, for work that we're doing in buildings, for organizations that we offer assistance to, I'll give you a good example of it. On an annual basis, we're borrowing a substantial amount for the convention center and for the botanical gardens. Why? Because we own those. And if we were putting $1 million in annually of our operating, instead of borrowing that money and spreading out the payment of it over a 15 or 20-year lifespan, we would have to generate more revenue. And the only way to generate more revenue is through taxes. So I look at it as borrowing money on behalf of the county when we pay some of the lowest rates out there. The one thing about governments is they're a guaranteed rate of return. You're not going to get a tremendous rate of return if you're buying bonds for a government, but you're going to get a guaranteed rate of return, and they're non-taxable. So for investors, they like the opportunity of knowing that they're going to get a rate of return, maybe not a huge rate, 2, 3%, but they are not going to be taxable for the amount that they receive back in the principal and interest payments. So for us, it's an advantage. We can go to the market. We can sell our bonds, bring that money in, use it for major road reconstruction projects like East and West Road in West Seneca, North and South Main Street in Angola, Lake Avenue in Hamburg. Those are big projects that are going on right now. rather than having to ask the taxpayers of Erie County, okay, I need to raise your taxes so we can do more work.
You know, this is very interesting because, you know, you have the county owns a lot of real estate.
Yes, we do. We own a lot of roads and we own a lot of buildings. And just give an example. I mean, we've got a few hundred buildings that people, if you went around and said, what's that? That's a government building. That's a county building. And then we own the football stadium. That's we borrow money to do work on the football stadium. We own the hockey arena. Under the terms of the contract we have right now with the Pagulas, we don't have to invest in the hockey arena. But there's always work that we're doing in some of our large-scale offices, as well as some of the premises that we have, like our parks. We borrow money to do work in the parks. We borrow money to do work at our jail and our holding center. We have one of the largest inventories of major buildings, probably of any owner in our community, and we're always having to update them and invest in them because just like a homeowner, if you're not investing in your home, your building's going to start falling apart and it's going to cost you more in the long run. So we do preventative maintenance, and then we do big projects like roofs. We do big projects like windows at the community college, which we own. And I always thought it was I used to laugh and tell people, I said, I never complained. I'll never complain again about the cost associated with renovating a kitchen after the county had to invest a couple $1 million to renovate the kitchen at the convention center. So $10,000, $15,000 doesn't sound like that much, even though it is a lot of money when you're thinking about how much money we had to invest at the convention center to redo its kitchen. But as a result, they can handle more events now. And with that more events, more revenues generated for them, and they're more self-sustaining, which means we don't have to give them as much money in the long run to balance their budget. So you invest some money to hopefully save some money in the long run and create a better facility. And those are the decisions that we do all the time. And we're really doing right now, myself and our budget office, because we're just wrapping up the details with regards to the 2020 budget. And that'll come out in early October.
It's interesting, you know, we've had the Visitors and Convention Bureau visit Buffalo Niagara, as we call it now, Patrick Kaler on several times, and we've talked about where their money comes from, and obviously a good portion of it comes from the county. I think back originally, if I'm not mistaken, the bed tax was designed to fund that kind of thing, yet now it's a revenue share, I believe.
Well, 90% of the revenues associated with Visit Buffalo Niagara come directly from Erie County. What ends up happening is it doesn't necessarily say that the revenue, the bed tax money, goes straight to the Visitors Bureau. But what it does, it goes into our general operating budget, and then we use our general operating budget to pay the cost associated with Visit Buffalo Niagara, the convention center. And it's a lot. I mean, we provide an annual subsidy to the convention center in addition to what we put in for the infrastructure on an annual basis. As I said, we're basically putting about, I think it's 88% is the total of the total operating budget for the Visitors Bureau comes directly from Erie County. We also provide a significant subsidy to a lot of arts and cultural organizations in town. We actually spend more money from our budget between Visitors Bureau, Convention Center, and the arts and cultural organizations that we sustain, which are tourism drivers, than we bring in with regards to the hotel bed tax. It's just the money doesn't all go straight to the Visitors Bureau. It basically gets split up between those three entities.
Well, tourism is a big deal here. We've talked a lot about that on this show in terms of cultural tourism in particular, and you've isolated some of our cultural institutions that are so critical to our future, I believe, and are present in this community. Some even argue that our cultural heritage, so to speak, the cultural institutions are perhaps even greater than a community like ours could normally sustain. I mean, we wouldn't, if we were this size today and we said, what would we build? We probably wouldn't build what we have.
We'd never have it. I mean, we are living off of, in some ways, the legacy of the city of Buffalo and Erie County being one of the largest communities in the United States at the beginning of the 20th century. The Albert Knox Art Gallery, the Philharmonic, the Buffalo Zoo, the Science Museum, the History Museum. If we were the size community today that we are and we just started kind of overnight, we'd never have all these organizations. So we have this incredible legacy of organizations that are educational in purpose. They enrich the mind, they enrich the soul, depending on how you want to look at it. And we need to keep them in here because it creates two things. Number one, an incredible quality of life that you're not going to get in a lot of other similarly sized communities. And number two, as you mentioned, they are tourism drivers. They bring money into our region. If you walk through the Albright Knox Art Gallery, at least before they start, they close it for their major reconstruction, you'll hear multiple languages being spoken on any one day. People come from all over the world to see the artwork at the Albright Knox Art Gallery. So when they're coming to the Albright Knox Art Gallery, that means they're staying in local hotels. They're eating in local restaurants. They're probably going to go to something else like the Darwin Martin House, or maybe stop off at one of the other historical sites we have, like the Teddy Roosevelt inaugural site. And every one of those dollars that's brought into our area is just more revenue to pay for the expenses we have in county government, the expenses that business owners have. And every dollar that we can bring in from this area is a dollar that we don't need to spend locally to sustain those organizations in our community. So anytime somebody criticizes our investment in these arts and cultural institutions and they say, oh, that's a stupid use of money. You should only be spending that money on roads, or you should only be spending that money on the bills. My argument is, well, we can spend money on roads, we can spend money on the bills, and we can also spend money in these arts and cultural institutions, and they all have a value in the long run. And the value for the arts and cultural institutions is twofold. They're educational, they enrich our mind, and they bring in money to our region, and that's a good thing.
How dependent are we, Mr. Poloncaris, on the state itself to help support a lot of this stuff?
Well, from Erie County's sake, we don't receive a whole lot of state aid for our general operational. Most of what we do in county government, I should backtrack. When I'm not talking about the sort of the social service aspect of it, but like the arts and cultural institutions, other types of the libraries, the parks and stuff, that all comes from our own dime, so to speak. The state does provide substantial assistance to arts and cultural institutions for large infrastructure projects, mm-hmm. but they generally don't put any money in for operating. That's mm-hmm. just local share, so to speak, county, and the money that's generated by these organizations. The state is instrumental in the health and welfare area. They do provide assistance there. And Erie County is the primary provider of those services locally, but some of the money comes from New York State. And then when we talk about economic development projects, the state, of course, has been investing in economic development projects all over the community, from down in Chautauqua County all the way up to the furthest parts of Niagara County, especially in the city of Buffalo. We see a state investment in a lot of different projects. And I think it's important. The state neglected this area for decades. I once said to Governor Cuomo it was like benign neglect, and he said no, it wasn't benign neglect because it could not have been benign to have left this area so on its own for decades. Mm-hmm. So he has made it a pillar of his administration to ensure that we get our fair share of state dollars, and I think that's important because it helps us grow our economy. I think the most recent one that's made a big impact is the Northland investment, mm-hmm. where people are being trained for the jobs of the future. That's key. That could not have been built without the state investment, and now people are being educated there for long-term careers and the jobs of the future, and that's exactly what we need to do to continue to grow our economy. So the state was instrumental on that, and I think it's important that people know that.
I want to come back to that Northland thing because we're going to be doing a show on that specifically upcoming. And it's very interesting to me I took a tour of the place, and it's $55 million worth of yeah. investment, which is shocking in and of itself. But what's even more shocking is, to some extent, at least to me, that we have the applicant quality is not up to the quality of the product that they want to produce. In other words, what you get when you graduate from that institution it's tough to get into it.
Correct.
And so I think we have like 173 people in it right now, not a substantial number. So if you look at that investment and the number of people that are actually benefiting now, it's become very difficult to find people qualified to get into those programs.
That's
what I understand.
Yeah, this was the first class that graduated from Northland, and talking to Stephen Tucker, who's the CEO of the Northland Project, they're looking to double that to about 300. Mm-hmm. It's not thousands that are going to go through there on an annual basis because it is a highly technical, very skills-oriented type of training, but it's the type of training for jobs that exist here. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. One of the things we're hearing from employers is they can't find the people to fill these jobs.
Exactly.
And part
the
of
number
it is
of the, vacancies that are going to be created in the next 10 years is shocking.
Yeah, when you have
just through aging and attrition.
The soon to be, and it's already started, so to speak, baby boomer retirement, which we know there's a lot of baby boomers in this area. Many of them already have retired. The latter end of the baby boomers are starting to get to the point where they're retiring. I look at it, if we don't have the people to fill those jobs, we can have all the jobs we want in the world, but our economy is going to suffer.
And the jobs will leave.
They will. And so that's a big issue that we're dealing with. I've had lots of conversations with Dottie Gallagher and John Dandies from the Buffalo Niagara Partnership on it. We're not always in alignment on what we think is the best way for training dollars to go, but I think we all understand that this is a key issue that needs to be addressed. We're all very supportive of Northland. I think in the long run it will be a huge advantage because it's taking individuals who don't have the skill set now for those jobs. And in a fairly short period of time, we're not talking 4 years. For some of them, it's no more than a year, giving them the skills that they need so that they can go out there and immediately work in the marketplace in jobs that are paying good money. And I think that's important to understand. These are not minimum wage jobs that they're going into. These are jobs where they can start coming out there making $40,000, $50,000 a year starting, and then who knows where it goes.
You know, the other side of this whole equation, and you brought it up directly or indirectly, the social service side of this whole thing and our relationship with the state are the mandates that are created at the state level and then dumped in your lap, frankly.
Happens all the time.
And the county legislature's lap. And it's a shocking amount. And if I'm not mistaken, our entire real estate tax revenue is more than exceeded by the number of the dollars of obligation we have under these unfunded mandates.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we actually have one of the lowest tax rates of any county in New York State. We don't generate a lot in property taxes compared to our sales tax. Our property taxes, we generate less than $250 million. Our mandates from New York State are hundreds of millions of dollars more. And we have new mandates this year with regards to discovery, where they're requiring we take a little break.
We have to take a break. I hate to interrupt you. You're on a roll, and I want to keep you on that roll. We'll be back with more from our house to yours after these very important messages.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Go there today, and you'll find all the homes available here in Western New York and all across upstate. And you also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which allows you to really look at the entire spectrum of the opportunity and also the experience, what you will need to go through, I guess, to begin and end the process of owning a home or selling a home. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA, and this show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to buy the before and live the after, and effectively allowing you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, call 633-3700 and ask for details, and also ask about our pre-purchase commitment, which I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and even our warm home loan, kind of a fun one, only at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And if you just have a general inquiry about real estate and you don't want to call us here at the show, call the Hunt Customer Service Center, 633-9400. One of our customer service reps will either answer your question there or direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. Remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. Stop into one of our many open houses this weekend and ask our professionals about that. And it really requires a professional group of advice to really follow through with that kind of experience. I'm in the studio today with Mark Pullenkars. He's the executive of the County of Erie, and we've been talking about kind of a wide range of topics about the job of being county executive and not and what the assets of our county are, and how the county executive's office, among other people, shepherd those assets. And right before the break, Mark, I asked you a little thorny little question about the social service issue and the mandates. And you were talking in the break about new mandates that are dumped on us here in Erie County. How's that affecting your life, and how will that affect all of our lives?
Well, they're good ideas behind them. Like, one is a speedy trial. They're requiring that all trials in New York State be held at a faster timeline, which is very good, but there's no money behind it. And as a result, Erie County has to hire more investigators for Central Police Services to analyze crime scene data. The district attorney's office has to hire more folks. So that's, in combined, hundreds of thousands of dollars of new expenditure that we didn't have to in years past. Same thing with the bail reform. Bail reform is a good thing. Someone shouldn't be thrown in jail for a long time awaiting trial just because they can't afford bail. But that means they need to have more pre-conviction money spent on our end, like through probation officers and other divisions of county government, to keep track of these individuals before trial. It's just what we deal with. Every year, there's mandates and new ones that come along. You don't often hear about them and the impact that they have, but I'm aware of it. Our budget office is aware of it. The legislators are going to be aware of it very soon, because it's going to be new jobs and new spend that we have to put in our budget. That we have no choice. Otherwise, we don't meet the mandates of New York State, and then we get in trouble. And I can't afford to have that happen.
How do you feel about that more generally? It's we've had discussions about this from various angles on this show forever, and the fact that we're sitting here in Erie County, and we're in New York State, we can't do anything about that. And the state says, well, we should do X, Y, or Z, but you guys are going to pay for it down the road. I mean, is to sit there and these surprises hit your lap, or do they call you and say, Mark, how are you going to handle this if we do this?
Well, they rarely call and say, how are you going to handle it? They usually say, here's what we're doing. The one thing I will say is that the counties and the county executives we're pretty strong lobbyists with New York State. We're also represented by the New York State Association of Counties, and they work right in Albany for the counties. And we are constantly putting pressure on the state to let them know about the impact of what they're doing on the local front. I remind Governor Cuomo, it's great that we have a tax cap in place. It's very important that we have a tax cap in place. But you're making it harder for us to meet the tax cap requirements when you keep on putting all these additional requirements and mandates for our budget. So we put a lot of pressure on them. We've had success. I mean, for many, many years, you heard about how Medicaid costs were just exploding and drowning counties, and you don't hear about that anymore, because we actually have had success in the state taking over much greater responsibility associated with Medicaid.
As a percentage of the total?
Correct. It used to be that of the 100% of Medicaid, 50% was paid by the federal government, and the other 50% was shared equally, 25% from the county, 25% from the state. We now have a Medicaid cap in place, which limits the amount of growth for the local governments. So now it's really 50% is paid by the federal government, and only 16-17% is paid for by the county, with the rest being made up by the state. Why is that important? Because now the state sees that, oh my God, we have these increasing costs. We have to be able to control the cost of Medicaid. And by them putting in place things to control the cost of Medicaid, it also then reduces our county share. We're actually paying less in Medicaid now as a result of two things: the state Medicaid cap, as well as the Affordable Care Act, than we were 10 years ago. I think that's because people are now realizing we have to control the cost of this. So by putting the pressure on the state, having them taking on greater responsibility, it's also had a benefit all around for everyone, because they've put in place, through the Medicaid redesign, greater costs. Sometimes people are like, well, it was great that the state put in place the Medicaid redesign. Well, they put it in place because they were now responsible for a greater share. And they realized if they didn't control costs, it was going to blow up the state budget. And so sometimes you got to put pressure on the state. Often it works. Sometimes it doesn't. And right now we're focusing on a few other areas as a united front for counties in New York State to put pressure on them so they can control costs at the local front just as much as they're controlling costs on the state.
One of the things about Medicaid that I've learned through others that have been on the show and my own investigative work is that there are some 36 programs in the Medicaid bill at the national legislation level. Most states opt for 7 or 8 or 9 of those options. We have opted for 33, if I believe I'm correct.
Correct. I mean, we
isn't that just a crushing burden in the long run? I mean,
yeah.
And realistically speaking, the amount of burden in the state of Texas and California combined is less than it is here in New York State. And I just wonder if you see that, and from the particularly Association of County Executives or counties, if there's any kind of push from you people in your position to put us in line with other states.
Well, here's the problem. In those other states, they have the option of providing hearing aids to seniors. They don't. That's one of those lines that you can have in Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Or eyeglass, prescription eyeglass treatment for seniors.
Or plastic surgery.
Yeah. Well, the plastic surgery is only as needed. It's not.
Determines that?
Well,
the look in the mirror and say,
if you get in an accident and you bust up your nose, then maybe you could have plastic surgery under the Medicaid program. But most of the add-ons in Medicaid, like walkers, I mean, if I said we're going to call on the state to eliminate in the Medicaid program, which is the primary provider of health insurance for those that are poor or those that are going into nursing homes.
Right.
Medicare is a different program for most seniors. Mm-hmm. But the primary provider, let's say we had a child who needed a walker. And I said, we're going to eliminate that from the Medicaid program. The public would go nuts. But there is a cost to it.
Right.
Same thing with seniors in a nursing home, that Medicaid is the primary provider. If they say we were going to limit the amount of money that could be used by Medicaid for the services that are provided for seniors in nursing homes, most people would be upset, because then that burden of the cost for the parent or the grandparent in the nursing home would fall back on the individual.
Or the local government entities.
It's the double-edged sword of you could pay less, but then you get less service. And if we're talking about stripping a hearing aid for a child who's developmentally disabled and needs it so that they can move forward in life, then what have we really done? We're going to have greater costs in the long run anyway with trying to make that child go forward. So there's no easy answer to it.
No, there isn't. I don't mean to sound cruel and heartless.
I didn't take it that way.
Eliminate hearing aids for children. That's not my goal. But
didn't think so.
but my goal is to help us become more competitive. And I think that's your goal, too. I would like to think that. I know it is. Anyway, we have a caller on the line, Mark. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Mark, a couple quick questions. Number one, I'm a season ticket holder for the Bills, and I love New Era Field. I love the location. I love the facility. Number one, where do you stand on that? And number two, what do you see to prevent people leaving the state like they are, people with a lot of assets because of the tax atmosphere, anti-business atmosphere? What are your solutions to that?
It's a double-edged sword there.
Yeah. Well, first on the stadium, of course, the county owns the stadium. We were intimately involved in the negotiation back in 2012, 2013. I actually wrote a book about it. It's now for sale all across Amazon and all those other places. It's called Beyond the X's and O's. And the next county executive is going to be negotiating with the Bills with regards to the long-term plan. Whether it's a continual renovation or, for that matter, a building of a new facility and where. I don't think it's appropriate to negotiate in public beforehand, so I'm not going to sort of tip my hat as to what the long-term view of the county is, at least as I'm county executive, other than to say that we've gone through this process before with the last ownership group. It's not going to be an easy process. It's not going to happen in a short period of time. But I think it's important that we do what we believe is in the best interest of this community. The NFL is different when it comes to what they want. And I'm not saying what the Pegula is. I'm talking about the NFL as an organization is different what they want than what is probably in the best interest of this community. So we'll just have those negotiations with the Pegulas. The state will be involved. And in the end, we'll do what's in the best interest of this community.
Well, there's been a lot of talk. As you know, there's a study group out there. I guess we've hired a consultant. Is that correct?
Well, the Pegulas have hired a consultant. CAA Icon is doing a report for them, but that will not be made public.
Mm-hmm.
They've agreed to share with the county anything they find with regards to the stadium. Now, we're always doing analysis. We have our own analysis on the stadium. structural analysis, that is. But they've agreed to share any particular issues associated with the stadium from an engineering and an architectural standpoint. But the other information that they're doing, they are not going to release that publicly. This is their own internal study. We in the county perform our own analysis on the facility. It's funny because the gentleman who called in was from Rochester, and he's a season ticket holder. And John, I'm glad you're a season ticket holder from Rochester, but Monroe County doesn't put a penny in for the Buffalo Bills. Niagara County doesn't put a penny in for the Buffalo Bills. But Erie County does.
Wouldn't they argue that they give money to the state and the state gives us money? I mean, I guess if I were in their shoes, I'd say just a moment. Anyway.
Yeah, well, it's a plausible argument, but if we came forward and said we needed to build a new stadium and we're going to ask the entire Western New York and Central New York community to help chip in, I think all these other communities would be like, well, why would we do that? Well, the alternative could be we'd lose the team. And I will note, since we negotiated that last lease with the strong non-relocation penalty, which kept them here, three cities have lost their teams. San Diego lost it to Los Angeles, St. Louis lost it to Los Angeles, and now Oakland is losing it to Las Vegas. And in this modern NFL today, they don't care where the teams are playing. They only care that they generate the largest amount of revenue possible. And that's why you see teams move. And we're going to do what's in the best interest of this community to keep the team here.
And on that note, we'll be back with more with Mark Polenkar from Our House Heroes after these important messages. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the allnewhuntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment and the low rate and closing cost guarantee. These are the best things you can do for yourself if you're possibly thinking about buying or selling or refinancing your home. Call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700. Speak with a mortgage consultant. Let them really work with you on the whole process of home financing, because it's integral and probably the key to what you're going to be able to do in the real estate market. We're in the midst of a very special show for you. We've got about 12 minutes left here, and with our county executive, Mark Polenkar, here in Erie County, and we've been talking about, I think, some very consequential issues for our present and future with the county executive. Before we get back to a couple of those issues, Mark, we have another caller on the line. This is Sam from Williamsville. Sam, how can we help you?
Yeah, I wanted to know if the county commissioner was aware of the policy that if you, or a teenager that goes through the court system, but they have a mental health issue, and they are designated to go to ECMC for help, but if there's not a bed available, they place them in holding at the downtown jail.
ECMC is the primary provider of the psychiatric evaluations. Mm-hmm. ECMC is now a separate entity. It's no longer owned by the county, but we have a very important relationship with them. They cannot put any 16-year-olds in the holding center because of the reforms that were done last year. And effective next month, October, all 17-year-olds will be moved. So there's no one that is under the age of 17 starting in October, 17 and under, who can even be put in the holding center. So they don't just take a child who's under evaluation for psychiatric care and put them in the holding center. They'd have to have been arrested for a crime. And now with the new Raise the Age law, that was another state mandate that was passed last year, but an important one. You don't want 16 and 17-year-olds going into the prison population with adults. They can no longer be placed in the holding center. So I'm not exactly certain. Sam's question was more sort of if a child goes in there for psychiatric evaluation, then they're moved to the holding center. That's not what it is. We have other homes and other off-site facilities where they can be placed. The problem sometimes is we may not have a local bed here, so then sometimes they even have to move the child elsewhere. They would move them to a facility. I just look at it as it's a tough thing to do because you want to separate children from adults, especially those that are maybe under psychiatric evaluation.
Well, you know, that's a very specialized question, and I appreciate our caller on that. But back to where we were going with this whole thing in a broader sense. And before we get there, I think some of our listeners may not know much about Mark Polenkar. How did you get into politics, and what was your background or why the hell are you in it? I guess a better question.
I get asked that a lot by people. Why are you in it? I grew up in Lackawanna. My father was a steel worker at Bethlehem Steel. My mother was a nurse at Mercy Hospital. I have two younger brothers. Went to public school my entire life. I remember when Bethlehem Steel was going out of business and it was closing up shop. I was in high school back then, and it devastated the community. Had a huge impact. And one of the things I saw then was community and government rallying around a city in crisis, a community in crisis. It was bad back then. And I just looked at it as an opportunity in the future. If I ever have an opportunity to serve my community, I'll try to do that. Graduated college UB, worked for a number of years. Then I decided to go to law school, went to University of Toledo Law School, and graduated in 97 and came back into this region when people were leaving in droves from my generation. But I knew we had a great community here. We had great bones. But I felt like if I could come in and do something, I could help turn it around. Worked as an attorney for a number of years, and I ran for county comptroller, a chief financial officer for the county. That's why I'm always worried about inverted yield curves on bonds, because I dealt with that all the time as the comptroller.
Fun stuff like that.
Yeah, and saw that one of the reasons I got in public service is I realized I could have a much greater impact on the community in general than I could have as just practicing as a lawyer. Lawyer was interesting. I certainly could make much more money practicing law than I do right now as county executive, but it's more about trying to have a positive impact on the community in the long run, and I know I can do that as county executive in much greater detail than I ever could in the private sector.
I think it's important for people to know who you are, and that, I'm glad you shared that with us. But we were into some deep topics here, which we could talk all morning about, but we've got a couple callers on here. I should say text. Good morning. So if Connie's Medicaid share has been decreased from 25 to 16%, then the property taxes were decreased by that amount, question mark. People paid.
Well,
what that,
actually—
What does that mean? I'm not sure if that's a question or what.
The tax rate has gone down. The tax rate has gone down when I came in by about 15, 20 cents per thousand. And what the advantage is people need to understand is that your property taxes may have gone up, but the vast majority of property taxes go to school districts, special taxing districts like fire districts and the like. So when people look at tax bills, they see sometimes these huge increases, and they're like, oh, my God, I can't believe my taxes went up. And there's Mark Poloncarz saying the tax rate went down. Well, in usual, what often happens is the other portions of it that make up a lot more of the total property tax bill, those went up. And when's the last time you heard a school district reduce its tax rate? You don't. Yeah, I mean, or its overall tax amount. They usually go to the voters and they say, we're going to increase the budget and will you support it? And the voters almost overwhelmingly support it because we want good schools. But the county's tax rate has gone down. And then we also have other things. I mean, I don't operate a small business. This is a $1.7 billion entity. That's billion with a B. And there's 30 departments, emergency services, Department of Mental Health, regarding Sam's call, that work on a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that the public never sees, except that rare opportunity when there's a mass storm and then we have to coordinate all efforts, or for Sam and his family dealing with mental health issues. So we have a lot of departments that the public never sees, but they're there to serve because that's what we do. We serve our bosses, the people of Erie County.
We've got other callers and questions right now. We've got 6 minutes left. Let's take a call from Deb in Wheatfield. Deb, how can we help you?
Oh, hi, Deb. I have a question for Mr. Poloncarz, and this may have been addressed, but regarding the budget, what can be done? We provide a Cadillac of services, meaning home health aid services for those on Medicaid. What in other expenditures they are do not, they're way above what the services provided for regular other insurances locally. What can be done to allow Erie County, Niagara County, Medicaid to cut back or trim some of our services to make them more fall in line with other states or other local commercial insurances in the area?
Thanks, Deb, for the question. We don't have any choice in the matter. That decision is made by New York State. New York State says, here's what's available under the Medicaid plan. That's what has to be provided under the Medicaid plan. It would have to be changed by the governor, the state assembly, and the state senate. It's as simple as that. She brought up home health care aides, and that's it's an important point. It's a double-edged sword. Once again, you provide home health care aides so somebody can stay in their home rather than putting them in a nursing facility, which it's much more expensive. So I don't have an answer that she's probably going to like, other than to say that it's a decision that I have no control over. Once the state says, here's the services you have to provide, it's a have to provide. You shall provide them. And until that day comes when the state changes it, we just in local government have to enforce it.
I guess if I were to put a footnote on her question, is there any incentive on the state's part or any belief in your mind that the state has any real interest in they must, I guess, but really in doing something about the whole tax and regulatory burden that we face in this state vis-a-vis the states that we're losing population to?
I think they do. I believe they do. It's, for example, the Medicaid redesign, which is a very, very complicated process. It's been going on for a number of years. The takeover of the administration of Medicaid from local governments to New York State is all part of that process. But you also see them put in place things that increase the cost of local government. So I think they do. I believe they do. I will say this. It's a very, very diverse state. Between where we live in Western New York to the tip of Long Island and Montauk Bay and then that big behemoth in between in New York City, it's always going to be us versus them in some ways. We can put pressure on them to make changes, and sometimes they do, but on the grand scheme of things, it's very difficult.
You know, this is a whole separate show, but one of the things that is often stated is that we have two states politically. We have upstate and we have downstate. And there, as you point out, it's a highly diverse state and with vastly different interests, where other states are simply more, I guess, consistent in the population makeup, such that it's easier, I guess, to have a prevailing point of view. Ours is much more complex, and it's a whole other show, and I don't want to get into it today. But the fact of life is we have a set of challenges that are not going to be easily met. But in the meantime, as we started the show, we have an issue of keeping high quality people and attracting high-quality people to this community. One of the things you mentioned about the medical campus is one way that we're doing that to attract people to our community. But the way that we're losing people is through this tax and regulatory burden that you, as you pointed out, have no control over.
I can't control the state, and I can only control ours. I look at it this way. We do the best that we can to manage our budget. I'm going to release a budget in early October that will meet the state tax cap. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, we're going to have to drop the tax rate again, which is a good thing. So folks out there are wondering, are you going to meet the tax cap? And the answer is yes, because I've never proposed a budget that went over the tax cap. We've reduced the tax rate. We'll do that again. It's not easy to do that when our increases for our personnel lines are going up 2 to 2.5% on average. But we find a way to do it because we're here to serve the public and ensure that we provide the best, most efficient government that we can to meet the needs of our community.
One more question quickly. This is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, quickly, how can we help you? We've got about a minute and a half left.
Just for the sake of growth in places like Clarence, would you favor extension of sewer lines?
No. That sprawl that increases our infrastructure costs. We try to avoid the sprawl going further and further out from the central core. So when a developer wants to come in and put a new subdivision in and say, hey, can you pay for the sewers? Our answer is no, we're not paying for the sewers. You got to pay for the sewers. If you want to, that just increases our overall cost when we push our infrastructure further and further out, whether it's a new road or in this situation, new sewers. We're spending $3 million next year to redo a couple miles of sewers on Maple Road that just are old and need to be replaced. I don't want to have to spend and build new sewers further and further out for just a couple subdivisions when it costs us millions of dollars to do that.
And we have an aging infrastructure in the city we have.
Yes.
So it's an interesting question. Mark Poloncarz, executive of the County of Erie, thank you very much for being with us today. And if our listeners wanted to follow up with you in any way, shape, or form, how would they reach your office?
Two ways. They can call us at 858-8500, or they can send an email to countyexecutive@erie.gov. My staff and I will get that message.
Thank you very much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure, Peter.
I'd like to thank our listeners. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is hunt country.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!